Let's talk to John Beaver now. Financial advisor, Phase 3 Advisory Services at phase3advisory.com. Hi, John. Give us some of your time today. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And all this craziness is also in the market, and it can be very disorienting. And so we're going to try and sort this out, how people can keep themselves upright in their portfolios.
Boy, if you thought that news I was doing was crazy, wait till you hear about the markets. What happened yesterday? How often do we have a 1,300-point swing?
Well, we tend to get those in two places. The first one is when we're actually working with a reversal, and yesterday did not quite meet the definition of a reversal day. It would be really nice if it did. That means the market pierces the low, reverses back up, and it's time to start moving on the upward trek. The second time that we see those is in a pause in a further decline or a further rise, depending on if it's a negative reversal or a positive reversal. So we do see them, but they don't happen often. And again, they're very disorienting, and people are trying to figure out, well, is the market going up? Is this a selling opportunity? So you have to really understand your time frame and understand the environment that we're in. We are in an inflationary environment. So higher rates are still ahead. We still have strong employment. So that inflation is not going away anytime soon. We also have heard that we've got very low stocks of diesel and heating oil. That's going to continue to be supportive for inflation. And we just don't see the Fed stopping nor slowing. In fact, that's what Chairman Powell told us about a month ago. They're going to be keeping at it until they actually see the whites of the eyes of low inflation, 2%, and higher unemployment.
You know, the three numbers that we all seem to be talking about every week, inflation, we talk about the markets, and we talk about interest rates. And I know they're all sort of tied together. I think in the long run, a lot of us are thinking, well, if I have to bite the bullet on groceries and gas for a while, I'll somehow get through. But just promise me I'll be able to retire someday. I think that's the eye on the prize that people worry about the most. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. And again, higher inflation rates are nice when we have higher rates for those savers, but the stock market has to reprice. And this is what we're going through. The stock market is repricing for a higher interest rate environment. It's this simple. When rates are low, investors demand less return. If they demand less return, they're willing to pay more for stocks and have a lower return going forward. Because we can't control companies' earnings. All we can control is the price we pay those companies for their stock, the price we're paying for the stock. So when interest rates move up, that means investors are demanding a higher return on their stocks, means they're willing to buy at lower prices, but not higher prices. When that change in interest rates, when that move up in interest rates is quick, like what we've had here, that's extremely disorienting. But we will get this resolved. These rates aren't going to go up forever. And they went up quite a bit in the 1970s, but they eventually stopped and came back down. So the inflation rate and the interest rates will peak out at some point in time, and we'll see a little bit more stability in the stock market at that point in time, perhaps a couple months before. But as we get close to that, and that's what everybody's trying to figure out, is where's the top in the rates?
Yeah. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Beaver joins us now and again. Let's talk a little bit more about the interest rates, John. You said, remember, we went through it in the 70s, and I was just thinking about that. You don't think that, say, 30-year fixed mortgage rates are going to go as high as they once were, do you?
I have no idea, but we do know this. The rates have jumped here. Eventually, they will come back down and will settle in at a range that everybody's trying to figure out. Maybe that's 4% on the 10-year Treasury, and maybe that's 5.5% on the 30-year mortgage. But we are in an inflationary cycle that can last a couple of decades. With so much money that's in the system, between the Federal Reserve and the Treasury printing $9 trillion and the additional government borrowing of $21 trillion in the last 15 years, that's going to create inflation in the system that's going to be very hard to control. So this is going to be a course of fighting inflation perhaps for a couple of decades.
So the elephant in the room is all of that debt then?
It's that $21 trillion worth of debt. See, while
31.
We're sitting here worrying about inflation today, I'm sorry, $31 trillion worth of debt, as we're sitting here trying to fight inflation, I mean, think about it. We had the financial crisis. That was a distraction. And then we had COVID. And we're sitting here thinking about inflation. Meanwhile, the government debt just continues to grow and grow. So today, our government debt at $31 trillion is larger than our GDP. That's never a good sign. You never want your government debt to exceed your nation's GDP. The last time that happened was World War II at the very end of the war, and it was just for 1 year, and GDP grew, and the debt was reduced. And we got that ratio all the way down to about 40%, where the debt was 40% of GDP. And again, GDP is everything we produce in a year as a country, all of our services and goods that we sell. So right now, we actually have a debt-to-GDP ratio of 120%. We've been above that 1-to-1 level, that 1-to-1 ratio, for over 5 years. So now the government's going to have to be turning its attention to how do they deal with the debt eventually. And that'll take a front seat to what's best for the economy, unfortunately. And I don't know when we're actually going to, you know, see that hit the headlines. Maybe it's not going to be for 4 or 5 years, but the longer we go not dealing with this, the bigger the problem is going to be down the road. It's just like what the Fed did. The Fed pushed down interest rates too far, too long, and now we're paying for that. And the same thing is going to happen with the debt. So, but how do you do this? How do you deal with this as an investor? You invest for inflation. So you want to hold investments that will actually benefit from inflation. For example, I-bonds for your shorter-term emergency money. And believe it or not, stocks over the long haul do adjust for inflation because companies can raise their prices mm-hmm. and they can maintain those earnings. It's just stocks are volatile while those rates are rising.
Energy and banking have been doing well this week. Is that anticipating these high rates that you're talking about?
Yes, and that's a good place to be. We've got quite a bit, you know, the news on energy is, you know, all over the place, and we do have shortages there. It doesn't help that OPEC has decided to cut, you know, what they've cut. And it doesn't help that we've got to fill this SPR back up. I mean, we've taken the oil out of it, but we've got to fill that thing back up again. So energy still looks like a good place to be. The energy stocks are not overvalued. And banks are finally another good place to be as we get higher interest rates that does benefit the banks. We talked about that a month ago. I don't think it's, you know, too late to get in. I don't think that the run is over. This could be a multi-year run.
I wonder what we should ask government to do then. Is it as simple as spend less and tax more? I wonder how we close that deficit gap.
In the same way that we close that deficit gap in our households, right? So we take a look at the budget, we cut what we can. If we can, we increase our income so we can get that budget turned right back up again. But unfortunately, we just don't seem to be electing politicians that have the will to do that.
Or maybe we don't know what the right way to do it is. There's two philosophies, right? You ease taxes on the people that create wealth, and then it trickles down to everybody else, or you tax the rich more. Now, where do you fall on that?
Well, it's a delicate balance for sure. There's no question about it. You have to keep a growing economy. So you have to do what's going to be best for businesses. Give them an environment where they can actually grow. Because what that does, that increases employment, that increases income, and that just feeds through the system. Now, we had that in the 1980s and 90s, but unfortunately, it was spurred by too much government borrowing. They went overboard on that. So the real challenge is keeping that budget balanced, and those are the two ways to do it. Unfortunately, if you raise taxes too high, you stall the economy, so you can only raise taxes a little bit more. We're getting close to where that bubble is, but we've got room to raise the taxes a little bit more. But we have to exercise discipline on the government spending.
You're talking about corporate taxes?
It would be the whole tax picture. When you take a look at the whole tax burden on the entire economy.
Talk to me just briefly then. Well, I don't think we've talked much about the market valuation. Maybe we have. We mentioned that energy and banking are good sectors to be in. Are there other areas that you would steer clear of or would direct people towards?
Well, I think we're getting to the point where people can actually be buyers in the market. You know, we're getting to the point of some maximum pessimism, which is really good. We like to see that. We like to see the retail investor kind of running and hiding, and they're starting to do that. That's good. Yesterday was an indication that the institutions were in there buying. That wasn't the retail investor buying. That was the institutions buying. So this is all good, and the market is down to a level now where it can be bought. It's not dirt cheap, but it's a relatively reasonable value. So where do we go from here? Well, we're looking at a minimum low of 3,500 on the S&P 500 or 28,000 on the Dow. We did that yesterday. We could press lower from here, so the investors have to, you know, have a longer-term time frame. But this is a good time to be actually buying the general market. If I were to focus in an area a little bit more than the broad market, I would look at value-oriented stocks and value-oriented funds. And for those that want to be very narrow, as we mentioned, energy and banking.
You know, John, so many of us aren't trading individual equities. We just picked a kind of fund for our mutual funds or for our retirement accounts, and we hope, you know, we're just dollar-cost averaging. We're all throwing, those of us lucky enough to, are just throwing money in these funds and hope that we're going to get a return on these low prices right now. That's kind of where most of us are.
And the market in this period of time where inflation is rising, it does a dance like this, three steps forward, one step back, three steps forward, one step back. So from 2016, we had three steps forward, and then we had the COVID one step back. We've had another three steps forward, and now we're taking that one step back. We'll have another three steps forward. So if we think about it that way, you know, right now, like you said, this is the time to be a buyer, and we will wait and eventually hopefully see that three steps forward again. I can't predict that because I don't know the future.
Yeah, but right now it feels like three steps back and one step forward.
It does.
And in fact, that's what we've been doing for the last year or so as well. Really for the last, for about the last year, we've been, I mean, we had a nice run. I would say it's not even been a year, but this market has been in a pretty full retreat for the last 6 months anyway.
Yeah, we started this year at the high, and since the beginning of January, we've been on our way down. Here's an interesting thing. In the years where the market starts off bad, if we take a look at the last 10 times that that has happened, 9 out of those last 10 times, the market has been higher in the fourth quarter. We're in the fourth quarter. That doesn't mean this fourth quarter will be higher, but at least the odds are on our side.
John Beavers, a financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services. Okay, John. We'll talk again. Thanks for your thoughts today.
All right. Sounds good.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. John Williams here. We have featured many wineries and distilleries and breweries on this show. I don't know that we've done one like this, though. Here's Joe Chura. He is the president and founder of Go Brewing, gobrewing.com. They open tomorrow. Joe, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Imagine you're kind of busy, maybe still pushing tables around and doing that sort of thing. What's your day like today?
Great question. Actually, I spent the better part of this morning getting our website ready. We had our place pretty dialed in, so I'm pretty proud of that. And we had a private event last week as a trial run. That went great. So super pumped. The website launched this morning about 8 a.m. So that was the highlight of my day so far.
Tell us about your beer and why is it different?
Well, our beer is non-alcoholic and low-alcoholic beer. So what that means is non-alcoholic beer is any beer that is under 0.5% alcohol by volume. And not only is it low alcohol or NA beer, but it's very low in calories. So you're looking at between 30 to 60 calories for our NA beer. And just to give you a comparison and some context, a normal IPA would be probably about 250 to 300 calories per 12 ounces. So it's significantly less. And then we have low alcohol beer that's any beer under 2.5%.
I see. I was looking at the calorie count on Dunkin' Donuts the other day. I was standing there in line, a glazed donut. is about then the calorie count of a can of an IPA. Yours would be, what would be the calorie count in one of your low alcohol beers then?
That's a great question. So we just brewed our first two and they came in at about 80 calories.
And then what's the distinction? Would I notice the alcohol in a low alcohol versus a no alcohol beer?
It would take a bit to notice it in a low alcohol beer. The average ABV in a beer ranges from 4 to, I mean, there's some places that have beer at a 10% range. So you can put that in the context that way. But for non-alcoholic beer, it would take you 40 beers to be legally intoxicated for most people, which is impossible.
And what makes you think that people want to go to a bar that serves alcohol that is no alcohol or low alcohol?
Well, it turns out that more people don't drink in this country than they drink, believe it or not. We just happen to see the folks that drink at bars and at restaurants drinking, because that's what they're there to do. But there's a huge segment of society that either, one, wants to not drink anymore for a variety of reasons, or second, they want to have a more moderate drinking mm-hmm. habit.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. I would have not guessed that. You're telling me more people don't consume alcohol in America than do?
It's about 50-50 right now. And that, and I should say that that 50% that does, they're on a spectrum. So you have heavy drinkers and you have light drinkers. You have people that drink maybe once a month. So on that spectrum, we cater to them in a variety of ways. So you can either have one of our beers in between another beer that you're having, or if you are a person that just doesn't like to drink at all, you can have our beer every day if you want to. You can even have it for breakfast because there's no yeah. alcohol in it.
Yeah. So then you don't. So you will serve no, you know, traditional alcohol beer. It's all going to be low alcohol or no alcohol.
Yeah. You think of us. It's low and no. We have no plans to serve or to make traditional beer. We may have a guest tap on from time to time, but we have no plans right now for it.
Are you going to be serving food at Go Brewing as well?
We'll have food trucks. We have food trucks lined up through for almost the balance of this year. We're going to be open weekends starting tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and having great food trucks and catering companies come in here very often.
And then what's the environment like inside? I think I might have seen a picture of your place. It looks, you know, the bricks and the hardware, it's that sort of a appeal?
Yeah, I wish you could see it, and I hope you come out here. But it is a modern country club vibe with tufted leather sofas, and we have walnut, this beautiful walnut bar with a huge bookshelf, a huge stage, great AV and sound here, and it's just really warm and inviting with a little yeah. bit of an edge. We got some street art on our walls and a little bit of flair here and there.
Yeah, well, then not the industrial feel. Maybe I didn't see a picture of it. That does sound cozier.
No, it's a mix of both, though. I think you got it right, but there's definitely a warm element to it as well.
I think it's a real interesting idea. I wonder if people will stumble in there, go, hey, there's this brewery, let's go in there. And the next thing they know, they're having a couple of beers, and then they realize that this isn't alcohol beer. I suppose they'd figure it out at some point. But I wonder if people who typically go to alcohol-forward breweries will also go to your place, or is it going to be a mixed crowd? One group goes to one place, and the other group goes to the other place.
You know, that's a great, great question, great point. We're seeing it already. We are across the parking lot from Salomo, an amazing brewery that's been here for 10 years. We have people hopping back and forth already, and we haven't even opened yet. So, yes, I think you'll see a mixed crowd.
I wonder if this is a way for alcoholics to enjoy the social aspects of a pub again.
You know, I was actually surprised by this because initially I did not think that would be the market at all. And I will say that people have to be really responsible for what triggers them in a variety of ways, you know. Yeah. And we would definitely not want to have someone come in here and be triggered to start drinking alcohol again, especially if they were sober for a long time. However, we've seen a number of people already reach out through social media and even passing by this place and almost get emotional that there is a place for them again. And they were able to stay sober, but they still like the taste of beer. So they have been drinking NA beer, but there's been nowhere to go that really serves it, especially on tap. There's nowhere in Illinois that serves NA beer on tap that we've seen at least.
Okay, tomorrow's the big day. They've already had a soft opening, it sounds like. It's, what do I see, 1665 Quincy Avenue? Is that where you are?
Yes, sir, suite 155. Go in the back and look for the big door with Chuck Norris on it.
Why not? And
that's right.
What neighborhood are you in? Whereabouts in the city, then?
In Naperville. We're actually in the western suburbs.
Oh, okay, okay. Pardon me. Oh, well, boy, that's a good restaurant and drink in town. So I think you'll find fertile grounds there. Wow.
Yeah, and we're already working on getting carried in some of the local restaurants. So reach out if you have any interest in Chicago as well.
Joe Chura, president and founder, GoBrewing.com is where you'll find out more for their new place. Okay, Joe, good luck. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Time for more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. United Airlines could be close to making a big order for new wide-body jets, though a Chicago-based company is reportedly eyeing orders with Boeing and or Airbus for more than 100 787 Dreamliners and A350s. The purchase would be one of the largest ever by United for long-range aircraft. United CEO says the airline's considering an order in the triple-digit range, and a deal may be announced by December. Representatives for United, Boeing, and Airbus declined to comment on the report. Motorola Solutions has been accused of overcharging the United Kingdom's home office for an emergency service radio network. That contract is ultimately funded by taxpayers. According to Bloomberg, the UK government watchdog accused Motorola of making an excess profit of $1.2 billion and called the company a monopoly provider. It recommended that price controls be imposed on the telecom network to restrict how much it can charge. The Motorola radio network handles the UK's police and ambulance services. The contract's been in place since 2000. Motorola called the accusations unfounded and incorrect. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's a Mr. Fizz Friday, and Jim Fizzell will be along right after I tell you that we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Hello, gardening guru Jim Fizzell.
Hi, Steve. Did you get Diane a gift for tomorrow? It's Sweetest Day tomorrow, you know that. You need to get her a box of candy or something?
Oh, I have not. Thanks for the nudge.
Thank you.
Don't forget that.
No. Maybe I'll take her leaf peeping. That seems like a sweet thing to do, and you don't have to drive too far from Chicago for that.
Oh, yeah, there are places around here that have good color. Morton Arboretum, the Botanic Garden are places that you can go to see fall color. The Botanic Gardens and so forth will usually, if you go online, they'll tell you that the fall color is at peak right now. So those are the times to go out. Some of the other arboretum that we have in the Midwest, the Clem Arboretum out in Rockford, and some of these others are very good about letting people know that it's a good time to come see fall color. And you can get into some of the forest preserves where, particularly where they have maple trees, they color up the best. Some of our other native trees don't color up quite as well.
Okay. By the way, what causes leaves to change color?
Not the frost. Chlorophyll production slows down, eventually ceasing. Of course, chlorophyll is a green pigment in the leaves, and that's what absorbs the sunlight for photosynthesis. And the stuff it doesn't use, it reflects. So it uses all the other colors, but hides those and the other pigments in the leaves. Those are always present. All the oranges and reds and yellows are there, and they don't show up until the chlorophyll begins to die off. Will there be good fall color? That's always the question. And that depends on the weather, not just the fall weather, but the weather throughout the summer. If it was good for growing the trees, you generally will get pretty good fall color. Then in the fall, you need gradually dropping temperatures, no freezing temperatures and no real hot spells. The temperatures dropping gradually. Cold nights and bright sunny days are what you're looking for, and you do not want a hard freeze, a frost, because that kills the leaves, putting an end to the season.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, from the farm to your belly, today's National Dessert Day, also World Egg Day. And don't forget that Sweetest Day tomorrow. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Sophie Gordon is the associate programmer for the Chicago International Film Festival. It's underway. What did I see, Sophie? 96 feature films, is that right?
96 feature films, indeed. It's a big program, and we're so excited about all of these films.
Can I shop them a la carte? Do I buy a season pass? How do we do it?
Yes, so you can check out the full program at chicagofilmfestival.com. We have 10 film passes. You can choose a ticket for any given film. There's lots of ways to attend the festival and check out all of these films.
Several venues throughout town?
Yes, absolutely. So we have venues all over the city, including the AMC River East 21, the Music Box Theater, the Gene Siskel Film Center, the Chicago History Museum. We also have some community screenings at Austin Town Hall and the Hamilton Park Cultural Center in Englewood. And we also have some of our films, including our 56 short films, streaming on our streaming platform virtually. So
no
it's
kidding.
Really all about celebrating all of Chicago.
ChicagoFilmFestival.com. I could watch them online, some of them anyway, huh?
Some of them, yes. Yeah, but we definitely encourage you if you feel like it, coming on down to some of our venues and seeing some of these films in person. We have a lot of filmmakers in town to talk about their films. We have wonderful Q&As as well as great panels in our industry days section of the festival to check out in person.
I got about a half a minute or so here. I know you'll hate this question. What films do you recommend we go see, Sophie?
Oh, there's just so many. Some that we're really excited about. We've had some excellent screenings so far. We're currently on day three of the festival. Some that we're really excited about, a local film, The Year Between. Its first screening here is tonight. Also, we have a wonderful selection of international films. One we're really excited about is a documentary called Alice from Colombia. We have one of the filmmakers in person for that, which we're very excited to talk with him about the film. Another one we're very much looking forward to is a Cuban film called Descent of Bee. So those are just some of the highlights, but we're, we have some others, some big names like Darren Aronofsky, who will be in town presenting his new film, The Whale. There's lots to see from the U.S. and all around the world.
Sophie Gordon is one of the programmers, the associate programmer of the Chicago International Film Festival. Let's all click on ChicagoFilmFestival.com. Well done, Sophie. Thanks for the heads up.
Thanks so much for having me.